It's time to present Scott DuPont to bring you another episode of Finance Your Movie with tips and strategies to help you get your money to tell your story. It's time!
Back once again, thrilled to have Rick Hamplin, filmmaker, mostly a writer and director right now. The movie critics are loving him on his latest film that I was a small part of, called Burt Reynolds, The Last Interview with Quentin Tarantino. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you, Scott. And you were actually a very large part, to correct the record. You not only produced the film, as did Maggie, but you got both Quentin Tarantino and Burt Reynolds to be in the film. So I know you're modest, but I want your audience to know how important you are and your contributions were.
I appreciate that. I always try to make my guests look good. And for the very small audience members that do see this on YouTube or video, Rick just had eye surgery. So that's why the sunglasses. And thank you for coming on. Really appreciate it.
No problem. When Scott DuPont calls, we listen and we answer. Even if I'm right out of eye surgery, folks.
So I want to talk a little bit about resilience, and we'll get into maybe some of the qualities that both Burt Reynolds and Quentin Tarantino have, since you got to interview and got to know both of them. But starting out real quick, you know our audience, Rick. It's filmmakers that are trying to get their project made. And I don't want to tell people not to try to go pitch Universal Studios or Paramount or Netflix to try to get $10, $20 million, whatever. But coming from a guy, and correct me if I'm wrong, you and Robert Cosberg and all of your students, you sold something like 65 projects to all the major studios?
Yeah, in a 9-year period, I was teaching screenwriting, first at the Artists and Writers Workshop and then at Loyola Marymount University, and then eventually at University of Southern California. We were doing seminars, and I met this amazing guy, Robert Cosberg, and he's gone on to become a major producer in, you know, Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger and 12 Monkeys with Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis. And I learned a great deal from Bob about developing, pitching, and setting up movies, now primarily at the studios. And I had 1,500 students in 9 years in all these different locations, and we sold check, contract, you know, money, real serious money, 65 feature film projects. So it was an unbelievable track record. Bob's written a couple books. There were tons of magazine articles written about us at the time. But the idea is, at that time, Hollywood was kind of a closed shop, and the independents weren't big. And so we were saying, here's how you do it, you know? And we were teaching people right off the street how to go in and sell a project. And many of those films got made. One of the most successful was Hard to Kill, which was written in my workshop class. It was called 7-Year Itch. And it was a wonderful project. And, you know, it was a huge movie, you know, it was a huge box office success. And so a lot of these films got made. And people like Brian Grazer and other wonderful producers would come to my classes and let people pitch their projects. And Brian actually bought one, became Closetland, the movie, from one of my students, Rada. And it was at my class that project was born. So I'm a great believer in that the power of the concept and the idea is the most important thing. If you have a great concept for a movie, what they call an ineffable, you know, concept, you're gonna go get a long way down the road. So we worked a lot on developing what genres, what titles, what were all of the elements that made it. And then Bob would come to my class, and my students would. And Bob, when he started off, was at Dino De Laurentiis, De Laurentiis Entertainment Group, DEG. He was a producer there. And David Lynch was there and a lot of other people. And then he went over to Goober Peters at Warner Brothers, and he was the vice president of Goober Peters. They did Rain Man, Batman, Gorillas in the Mist. The hottest production company, number one box office film, Academy Award winning Rain Man. And here's Bob. He would come to my class and we would simulate what it was like to pitch your idea to an investor, to a movie studio. And we would teach the students how to dress, how to sit, how to talk, you know, to pitch it. And then the students that did the best, Bob and I, or Bob, would then take them over to the studio. So they'd be sitting in Warner Brothers pitching the movie because they signed up for a screenwriting class. I mean, it was a very magical time. Bob is a very gifted guy. He was called the King of Pitch, which was his nickname. And I was sometimes called the Prince of Pitch. So I learned a great deal, all of which got, and here's the important bridge, I now apply as an independent filmmaker, because what happened was Bob primarily does like studio movies, big movies. And he wasn't that interested in the independent world. I made an independent feature in Los Angeles, which made 50 times the budget, got great reviews, and I wanted to go be a movie director. And then I had a family tragedy that necessitated I come to Florida. So I came to Florida. I interviewed with Disney, which was then Disney MGM Studios. And I interviewed with Universal, and they both offered me deals. If I would relocate to Florida, they would make me part of the whole scene of making movies. They had theme parks and they were trying to get filmmakers here and all that kind of stuff. So Bob and I, who, you know, he's still one of the most influential people in my life, you know, I think parted on good terms. And, you know, he was working on 12 Monkeys at the time that came out. And we had some projects that we were working on. And I just wanted to be an independent. I wanted to be an artist who created, wrote, directed films, doing exactly what I wanted to do right now.
So I want to get into that independent thing in just a minute. And I don't want to rain on people's parade. I don't want to ever say, hey, you'll never get a studio to pick up your project and put $40 million to greenlight it. I don't want to be that guy. I don't have the expertise, but just a reality check. So we're not painting rainbows and unicorns. If, let's just say hypothetically, you're not on the Warner Brothers lot, you don't have a vice president of Goober Peters connection, you don't have a Rick Pamplin connection, you're going in with a sales agent or somebody off the lot, you don't already have a development deal, two questions here. What are the odds that one of these huge studios, including the streamers, might pick up your project? And then the second question, what percentage would you estimate, even if it was back then, of stuff where they'll just buy the script and turn around, they'll never make that movie?
Well, Hollywood in those days, I don't know what the numbers are now, but they would buy about 500 scripts a year. And there were 100,000 registered with the Writers Guild. So 500, you know, would get optioned. And in those days, there were seven major studios. They made about 15 to 20 films a year per studio. Okay. In the old days, the glory days of Warner Brothers and, you know, like the 30s and the 40s and the 50s before the advent of television, there were like 500 movies a year made. Now, I'm talking about English speaking movies. I'm not talking about overseas foreign markets, but American movies dominate in every country in the world. So if you've got an English-speaking movie, you're right over the target, as you like to say. And then what happens is the studios buy all this stuff and they can't get the right star. They have budget problems or, you know, whatever. And that's called development hell, which is, you know, I made a nice living. And my mother, who was a retired school teacher, used to call me up all the time. How are you doing in Hollywood? I'm fine, mother. I'm like, what do you do exactly? Well, mother, I'm a writer. And I'm teaching and I'm optioning movies. And well, why don't I see your movies at the theaters? Well, you know, I'm selling movies, you know, to Disney or to Warner Brothers, but they don't all necessarily get made, but I get paid.
Well, how what percentage? That? What percentage would you guess back then would just be stuck in turnaround or development hell versus how many actually got made?
Well, I think all of mine. For example, I was with Goober Peters for 5 years. They bought five projects from me. I mean, this is the biggest production company in town. I'm at Warner Brothers. I'm having lunch in the executive dining room. I'm doing all this stuff. You know, we're picking up the phone and calling movie stars. Because when you call them up and it says Warner Brothers, you can get to anybody. And so not one of those five movies got made because John Peters and Peter Guber went over to Sony. And when they left, all those projects, I think there were 52 of them.
So five for five that got picked up didn't get made?
No. The only movie that I created that got made that had my name on it was a movie called Darkroom that I wrote a spec script for Universal Studios. Universal Studios, I didn't write it for them. I wrote a spec script, kind of a Hitchcock thriller with another guy, and it got made and Universal released it. I have another film that my name mysteriously was taken off of or disappeared. It went in turnaround, and it was a very big movie. It was a blockbuster movie. I got paid, but my name was not on the movie in this.
Yeah, yeah, you told me about that. Tragic.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
So all these reasons made me want to be an independent. But the question that I think you were starting to ask that I probably interrupted you on is it's exactly the same. If Mark Canton was the head of production at Warner Brothers when I was there, and you go into a meeting with Mark and you pitch it, and then Mark would say, and this was one of the great moments of my life, he said, okay, put another $50 million in the pitch. I was like, okay, you know, because you're in those meetings, you agree with whatever they say, you know.
Yeah, they're calling all the shots.
So I'm walking out of the hall with Bob Cosberg. I said, $50 million? What's $50 million? He said, well, it's a set piece. I said, and I, the first time I'd heard that, what's a set piece? Well, explosions and blowing up cities, and you got to write the equivalent of $50 million. They want more. In those days, Warner Brothers, every movie opened with a helicopter shot. They didn't have drone. You had to overspend. And the way you'd get your movie made was you put another $50 million of fireworks into the script. I mean, it's a terrible way to make movies, but Warner Brothers was highly successful at that time. But here's the answer to the question, Scott. This is a million-dollar answer. It's exactly the same when I'm talking to a guy about putting $10,000 in. It's the same exact thing, except I'm not putting $50 million in to sweeten the script to get the green light. And I may not have as big a star. I may not have Arnold Schwarzenegger attached, but I would, you know, who at that time was the number one star. But I might have someone else of that, you know, like we had Burt Reynolds or we had Quentin Tarantino or, you know, whatever names that mean stuff. Because the names change, especially since the post-pandemic world. In the streaming world, the concept is king. They don't even let you put the movie poster anymore.
Yeah, it's a little thumbnail.
Yeah, a little thumbnail. Everything I learned from Bob Cosberg and everything I learned in 18 years in Hollywood exactly right now allows me and you to be a success in streaming. And if you're a filmmaker, and I've been at this a long time, I've been the director's guild, all this stuff. I've won awards. I've had movies open in theaters. Streaming is the new reality. Embrace it. Embrace the lower budgets. Learn about how it works. But it's exactly the same. It's just the numbers are smaller. That's all.
Okay, so let I want to pivot. So I'm not the expert in selling a project to a big studio. I've tried, never done it. So let's pivot to, you want to do it independent. You're buying into the fact that you can make a reasonable, high quality film for probably under $1 million if the story lends itself. Talk about resilience, and I want to get your reaction. To a filmmaker friend I was trying to help out. I really, really wanted to help a friend out. And he said he reached out to over 20 people. He's sharing his business plan and nobody put any money in and he quit. I mean, what do you say to somebody like that?
Well, two things. Number one, I always get a professional business plan. And I always work with people that have made movies and are kind of know what they're doing. And, you know, Louise Levinson, our mutual friend, always talks about people hire her. She writes a business plan. They pitch it to their friends and some relatives. They say no, and they put it on a shelf in a closet, and they don't go forward. I'm the most successful client that she's ever had in the last 28 years. I had 7, 8 movies, whatever it is. Every single business plan that I've ever been involved with for a feature film has been funded. Every development fund that I've ever written a business plan for has been funded. you don't give up. You don't. First of all, when I was teaching, rule number one, Hollywood. When I say Hollywood, I mean filmmaking. Filmmaking in general in the English-speaking world, it is a marathon, not a 100-yard dash. So if you're going to try something and get 20 no's, 20 no's is nothing. When all the, you want to talk about these students that sold their scripts, first thing I did was make them come up with 100 ideas. And all the ones that sold were like from 75 to 100. The first 75 ideas of any screenwriter never sell. So once you're a professional, it's like being a photographer. You know, when you go out, and I've been a freelance photographer. And in fact, I was involved when I was younger. I dated a Newsweek photographer that covered Hollywood. And she took 100 pictures for every one picture that Newsweek used. It was 100-to-1 ratio. When all the great directors like to look at 100 actors before they cast a part, speaking part in a movie. You get what I mean? Interesting. I'm like, okay, the 100-to-1 ratio. So if you go to 100 people and they all say they're not interested in your movie and you can't raise $5,000, then you've probably got a problem. But if you don't go to 100 people, you're the problem.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you and I ever talked about that, but that literally is the formula. Because I've been tracking this for 25 years on my projects. You talk to about 100 people, about 10 are going to be willing, receptive to look at a business plan. Because not everyone has an extra $5, $10, $20,000. I understand that. And then out of those 10 who look at the business plan, at least one, sometimes two, say yes.
Well, there's the 2% rule. If you know anything about marketing, any of that stuff, there's a 2% rule. And the 2% rule, which has been well documented, is you'll always get 2% if you do 100. Okay? And I found it in screenwriting. I found it in fundraising. I found it in being resilient. I've worked on a movie that is over 30 years old. I don't give up. I've had two major movie stars die while I was trying to get the movie funded. Okay, one was an Oscar winner, one was an Oscar nominee. I don't give up. I have to tell you a real quick story. I know we have a limited time. When I was teaching, the first place I taught at was Sherwood Oaks Experimental College, where I had met Sid Field and taken some screenwriting classes. And the day after the Oscars, we happened to have John Briley, who wrote the screenplay for Gandhi and won the Academy Award, come speak.
Wow.
And he told the story of Gandhi. He said, it took 20 years to get this film made. 13 of them, Dustin Hoffman, who was a big star at the time, was signed to play Gandhi. And after 13 years, he said, you guys are losers. You're never going to get the movie made. I'm withdrawing. I'm done with it. So they found this guy, Ben Kingsley, that nobody had heard of. He plays Gandhi. I think he won an Oscar. I know John Briley won an Oscar. The film won all these Oscars. But everybody gave up after 13 years, except John Briley and the filmmakers, Sir Richard Attenborough and the other people, got Gandhi made. And the greatest films ever made are passion projects. If you don't have passion, if you can't take 100 no's face to face, then get out of the business. Go sell shoes. Go do something else. Be a stockbroker. But this is, you know, you got to have a thick skin. You got to be resilient. You got to be in this for the marathon.
Quick side note about that. I went to a premiere in LA of The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt, and the PGA producer on that, Guyman Cassidy, told us the same thing after the screening, that it took over 20 years to get The Fall Guy. And that was a hit TV show, 20 years to get that funded. And now it's coming out. So another question on resiliency, and maybe this is more just advice that you could give, because I really, really want other filmmakers that have a fantastic project, if the budget lends itself to raising the money themselves. What would you say if someone is an introvert, they're just not comfortable reaching out to people, and they literally have a fear of talking to people? How did you start with Provoked years ago reaching out to 50, 100, 200 people to get Provoked funded?
Well, I was pretty clever. I got up in my class one night and I said, hey, I was at Loyola Marymount University this weekend and I met this movie distributor and we ended up having lunch. I was scouting the auditorium to do a seminar and I hit it off with this guy and he invited me to his office on Monday and asked me to pitch some of my ideas that could be done low budget direct to video, which was a whole new thing that was happening at the time. And I walked out of there with a 3-picture deal. And I said, I have to raise the money for these films. Here's how much it's going to cost to make one. How many of you are interested? And everybody in the room raised their hand.
Wow. So
my producing partner, Tony Bazanovich, was in my class and ended up producing the movie. I have students that were extras. All the students that were actors, I put them in the movie. And we raised the money out of my students and their friends. I just stood up in front of a group and said, I don't know what I'm doing, but I got a distribution deal. Let's make a movie. And everybody went, are you in? Yeah.
But let's fast forward to one of your other movies, because you have successfully raised millions of dollars for your other movies. What are some advice when people are frustrated and they get 100 no's? Like, how do you keep going? And what's some advice you could give?
All right. So I had a death in the family. I moved to Florida to take care of my mother. You know, I'm trying to be the good son. And now I'm in Florida and I meet with Disney. I meet with Universal. I decided I want to go to Universal. And they give me a one room office with a file cabinet, a desk, a phone, and no windows. And I went there the first day and I thought, what do I do? So I started calling up some of the people doing film classes because that's what I knew. And these people at Friends of Yours, KBG was at Studios.
Ken Grant.
Yeah, your buddy Ken and my buddy Ken and Valerie, his wife, invited me to come speak to a bunch of actors. So I got up and talked about Hollywood and answered all their questions and said, well, I'm here to be an independent filmmaker. And any of you that would like to help me, you know, call me. I have an office at Universal Studios. Here, write down the number. So this is the craziest story ever. So there's this actor in the class who's a retired police officer. He got shot or something, I don't know. And he calls me up the next day and he says, hey, I really, really want to talk to you. So he comes over to Universal Studios. We go to the commissary, Universal Studios, Florida. And he says, well, I want to act. I want to do this. I want to do that. I said, well, I got to get money. Can you raise money? And he goes, I don't know. I said, well, if you could raise money, you're part of my company right now. I like you. I like your background. And this guy's name was Joe. And we started a relationship. And then he brought in another guy who was a friend of his, whose father was a pastor of a very big church. So we just, I didn't know one person in Orlando, Florida. Not one person. I called up Universal Studios. I called up Disney. I talked my way into an office, you know, like Spielberg did at Universal in LA. Now I have an office. People can come and have lunch with me at Universal Studios. And I said, you know, I want to make a picture. And so what happened was, I said, who are the movie stars that live in Orlando? Well, there weren't very many. There was this guy, Michael Winslow, who had been in Police Academy. And so I called him up and I got his manager. And I said, hey, I want to make a movie. I'm from LA. It turned out we knew a lot of the same people. He says, well, you should come see Michael Winslow do his nightclub act. I said, great, I'd love to. So the manager came to my office to kind of make sure I was legitimate. And then he invited me to Lakeland, Florida, to this nightclub to see Michael Winslow. So Michael Winslow gets up and he does his act and he brings the house down, standing ovation. It's the funniest guy from Police Academy, makes a noise. Says, I love Michael. He's wonderful.
Genius.
So I go back to the dressing room because there's an early show and there's a later show. And I said, he said, hey, great to meet you. What'd you think of the show? I said, Michael, this is incredible. But here's the weird thing. You're doing a clean, family-friendly show that kids love, but kids can't come to a nightclub. And he goes, yeah. And I said, I want to make a movie of your act and I want to make it at Universal Studios and I want to fill it with kids. And I want to bring kids from homeless kids from the Boys and Girls Club, people off the park.
Wow.
We'll go to the studio and they'll fill the, we did 3 tapings of the movie. 500 people live. It was unbelievable. Panavision cameras, my first movie at Universal Studios. And as you know, we just got a check last quarter from Tubi. Here's the film. All right, Michael Winslow Live. It was made and released. It was actually made in the late 90s, released in 1999. Starz bought it. It played 80 times the first year. We had a little limited theatrical. And I'm still getting revenue, and the picture's still out there. And that was, this is how I did it. In a city that I didn't know one person. You know, well, we had one movie star that lived there, and he was talented. And I pitched him a movie. And that's why I'm telling you. Here's the key to raising money. Don't give up. Get a thick skin and learn how to pitch. Period. And if you do
another moral,
you're going to be successful.
Another moral of the story, because I didn't know the story about Joe, how you got them in, is just tell everybody and anybody what you're doing. Hey, I'm making a really cool movie. Do you want to help?
Yeah. Well, and if you have passion, which a lot of people have accused me of, I really care. I care deeply about making good film. Here's another one. So then after I did Winslow and it was a big success, I had a publicist in Hollywood who had been a student in my classes, and he had publicized me, and there were like 300 articles, and he had promoted me and Bob Cosberg and all this stuff. And so, you know, I called him up, and he said he used to work at Universal, and he said, well, I'll come down. So he came down and we're talking, and he represented Ernest Borgnine, Academy Award winner. And he said, you know, Ernie did this one-man show that he loved as a play. If you develop a one-man show for Ernest Borgnine, he'll do it. He'll come to Florida, and you can get him for a really good price. So I said, okay. I came up with this idea, and he said, well, you got to come in person. You got to come out to LA. So he was filming a TV show at MGM Studios called The Single Guy. And he was playing the doorman on this.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Sitcom.
And I'm a big guy. But Borgnine walks up, and I'm in the bleachers, you know, when they film the three sets of the, you know, sitcom. Borgnine picks me up and puts me down on the concrete floor and says, kid, let's go over here and talk. He always called me kid. He said, what's your idea? And I'm pitching it while they're filming the sitcom, you know, two sets over. And I'm whispering at the Borgnine. Borgnine says, I love it. I'll do your movie. And he said, get my home address. Send me the script. These are my conditions. He gave me like three conditions. And he said, I love it. It's great. So I went back to Florida. I wrote the script. I sent it to Borgnine. He called me up and he said, kid, what are you doing November 2nd? I said, I don't know. Who is it? He said, Ernest Borgnine. And I said, oh, don't tease me. And I hung up because I didn't think it was really Ernest Borgnine. He had a cold or something. So he calls back 5 minutes later and he goes, if you hang up on me again, I'm not doing your movie. And in the meantime, I had called his publicist. I said, oh, I got this prank call, you know, this guy Ernest. But he goes, no, it's Ernie. Ernie loved your script. He wants to do your movie. I hung up on him the first time he called me. So Borgnine calls back and he says, I will come to Orlando, Florida on November 2nd. How much do you need to film the movie? I said, I need 5 consecutive days. We can do the whole picture. We do it. He says, because my schedule is really tight. I'm doing McHale's Navy, the movie. I've got this thing. I've got, you know, he was a busy working actor and he's an Academy Award winner. And so I said, well, that's not enough prep time. I can't do it. He says, kid, do you want to make the movie or don't you? I will come to Orlando on November the 2nd. And he said, either you're ready to make the movie. Can you get cameras? I said, yeah, I can get cameras. Well, you better get ready because I'm going to come on the 2nd or I'm not doing your movie ever.
Wow.
So guess what? We had 30 days of prep. We did the picture. I got nominated on the Directors Guild ballot, 9 nominations on the Motion Picture Academy ballot. Got, by the way, it's on Google Play and it's on YouTube movies. And I just got checks on this movie, which was my next movie in Florida, which we shot in Universal Studios. And my point is, I went to a town where I didn't know one person. I probably had $50 in my pocket, you know, after the move and everything else. And I mean, it was crazy. And I somehow created out of thin air. I made a list of every rich person I knew and it was 12 people. After all my time in Hollywood, I knew 12 people. The first guy called him up, and he lived in Michigan. And we had written that script together that Universal Studios did, but he had done nothing else in show business. His name's Bob. And I said, Bob, you're my first guy on my list. You're a talented writer, but I don't have any money, but I could get an office at Universal Studios, and I want to make movies, independent films. And he said, I will be there tomorrow.
Wow.
I said, okay. So he flew down. He was in Michigan or Iowa or somewhere. And he had a job. He had a very high-paying job. And we couldn't get the meeting with the studio because the vice president, Norm Rice, God bless him, wonderful guy, wasn't available. So, but I showed him around Orlando, and we went, this is crazy. There's a restaurant chain, they're kind of going out of business, called Steak and Shake. So we actually went to Winter Haven to the Steak and Shake. On a series of napkins, I wrote out the business plan that I still have for the movie company that I started in 1994, that is in its 30th year of consecutive business, that's operated off those napkins that I still have, that was the business plan. We sat there all night at a Steak and Shake and outlined on napkins how to do our business. So he came, we met with Norm Rice, the vice president of the studio. I didn't know any of these people. And Norm Rice was like, well, we don't really have any offices. Spielberg has offices here. We're kind of busy. So I stacked up 13 videotape boxes of every movie that I had made in LA. I said, well, here's some of the movies that I made. Oh, by the way, one of these is from Universal. Look, Darkroom, Bob and I wrote it. Look, here it is. He, about 15 minutes, he said, all right, you've sold me. I got two little offices. He said, one's on the second floor, one's on the first floor. He said, let me show them to you. He said, I like you guys. You're going to make movies. I want you to be part of Universal Production. So he went up and he showed us these two offices. And the only reason we took the second floor, because there was a big area, sitting area, with a table and a lamp and a coffee table. And we put all of our stuff out there and acted like it was part of the waiting office.
I remember.
Yeah, it was hilarious. I mean, this is what Spielberg did when he went in and pretended like he had an office at Universal. You have to have a certain amount of chutzpah. If you don't have, that drive and ambition, and if you're not willing to make yourself look silly, now everything I told this guy was true, but I told it colorfully and entertainingly, and I got 15 minutes. And that was what Bob Cosberg used to say. These meetings at the studios for movies, they'll make a decision if they want to commit $50 million to a movie in 15 minutes. It's not.
My phone calls to potential investors are 2 to 5 minutes. They're either going to let me send the business plan or not.
I have a limit. I don't talk over an hour. If I'm talking to a potential investor, 1 hour, that's it. If you're not on board after an hour, next, go next.
Unfortunately, this is not a 1 hour show. It's 30 minutes. And thank you very, very much for coming on, Rick. And incredible that you went from being homeless in Santa Monica when you first landed in Hollywood. That's on a previous episode, by the way, if you want to hear those stories, to landing in Orlando with $50 in your pocket, to creating just this amazing body of award-winning films, including the latest, Burt Reynolds' The Last Interview. You can see everywhere AVOD now. Just go to moviemoney.com. And Rick, what's the best way that people can reach out to you or follow you?
Every single day, I thank God that I'm able to do what I do. I love what I do. I try to answer people who follow me on X, which was formerly Twitter, that DM me on LinkedIn. In fact, this afternoon I was writing some people. Sometimes I can just give them a sentence or two. Sometimes I send them to you. Sometimes I send them to Louise Levison. Sometimes I tell them, this is not realistic. You're wasting your time. Get a better idea. I try to help people. I don't charge money. I'm not selling a service. Bob Cosberg helped me. Scott DuPont helped me. The people that helped, Louise Levison helped me. The people that helped me, I like to pay it back and help other people. So you can probably get me through LinkedIn. You can probably get me through X. And let me just say this in conclusion. if you don't get your movie made, it's on you, nobody else. No excuses, it's on you. Anybody today can get a movie made and distributed, but you just have to have that passion and that drive. And I wish everybody the best of luck in doing it.
So true. Great words. Anybody. And I believe that too, with the low cost of film production equipment, anyone can make a movie if you want to.
This is the golden age of independent filmmaking right now.
Yeah, it really is. Rick Pamplin, thank you very much. Once again, go see Burt Reynolds' The Last Interview. Go to moviemoney.com. Thank you so much, Rick.
It's time!
There's never been a better time to make your own film. And if you have a dream project you're excited about and 100% committed to getting it funded, go to financeyourmovie.com, click on the green telephone, you'll see our calendar and find an open spot. We'll do a one-on-one call, which will be the best hour you've ever spent getting clarity and strategy towards financing your movie.